Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and this is June the 14th, 2012. And I'm so glad all of you are here and investing your time. And this is the main purpose for these calls is to answer your questions. And then I also have a some training material as well for you. So you're always welcome to bring your questions to these calls and you know, say them here to me, and I'll be happy to answer them for you and give you solutions and point you in the right direction for things. And also, you can if you can't make the call, you can email me questions, and I'll be happy to answer them on the call as well. And these calls are always recorded, so they'll be in your private members area. And we've got a whole library of calls. Of course, you know, if you click on schedule, there's a year and a half of calls that you can go back to. And to your suggestions as well. Oh, I think Duran just joined us too. Are you there, Duran?
Yes. How are you?
Hi, good. Yeah, good to hear your voice, Duran.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just sitting in a coffee shop, so I'm going to keep it on mute and listen in to the call.
Okay, congratulations again on your book. And yeah, Duran just came out with his new book, Performance Playbook, right? It's up on Amazon Kindle, right? Well, Amazon, is it as a Kindle book now as well as a regular book?
Yes, it's available as both. So yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, continuing to publish that and, you know, do other things as well.
So, yeah.
What's the name of your book?
Performance Playbook.
Yeah, Performance Playbook by Duran Blumberg, B-L-U-M-B-E-R.
You can go on BarnesandNoble.com and type in Performance Playbook and it'll come up.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, Duran asked me to write the foreword for the book, so I was honored to do that. And it's yeah, fantastic book, highly recommended. And I'm going to be reviewing your book on my website there. And it's got a fantastic tips, and so that's an example of what all of you can accomplish through this course too, is to write your own book and, you know, become an author, become a best-selling author. I have a method for doing that. If you look back in just a couple weeks ago in the archives of the course of the calls there, I talk about how I did that with my book, Your Performing Edge, and then I created an ebook called Sports Psychology Coaching for Your Performing Edge. And I'm going to be coming out with another new one soon, too, that I'll let you know about. So I'll give you that whole process for how to write your book, how to publish it, how to publish it on Amazon Kindle and Barnes & Noble, as well as your own website and many places. There's Apple Books, and then also how to market it and get it, you know, selling really well and bringing in great income for you and building your list of followers. So let's see. Let me put this on mute here so we can get a really good recording. And if you have questions, we'll have a period of time for questions here at the in the middle and at the end here. So feel free to ask me anything that you would like. So let's talk about what I wanted to talk about today was Olympic athlete case study. Since the Olympics are coming up in the end of July here, in about 7 weeks, there's a lot of interest and excitement about the Olympics in London. I've had my athletes at the last five Olympic Games, and so it's you know, it's really exciting to work with these types of athletes, and you can too. And even if you're not working with elite athlete, Olympic athletes, this also applies to, these techniques apply to any clients that you may be working with, as well as professional teams or elite athletes, or just, you know, serious athletes of any sort. And so I just wanted to give you kind of an idea of what to, what you might be able to look forward to. So the, you know, the kind of the landscape first of Olympic athletes is that they're, as you, some of these things you may know, or athletes, Olympic athletes are very sought out often, you know, and they're very selective about who they let into their private life and who they want to work with. So it's good to, you know, just to be aware of that, and aware that their time is very limited, and often you might only have a few seconds to speak with them, and they, you know, don't. It's a lot of times they. You want to find out if they already have somebody, a sports psychologist or a mental training person in place, and if they don't, then that's a great opportunity for you. Even though these athletes are very, you know, are at the top of their game physically, they're not always at the top of their game mentally, and they're also very vulnerable, and I find they have the same human emotions and experience the same pressures as everyone else, and they need just as much help, often sometimes more help, to get through the stress and the pressures of competition and what's going on. And they, you know, oftentimes have you know, just get overwhelmed with all the things that are going on. They're dealing not only with their sports, but they're dealing with their coaches. Depending on how, you know, many Olympic athletes don't have a lot of sponsorship, so they may be really good in their field, but they're not well known, so they don't have sponsors. And those types of athletes are easier to get to and easier to work with, because they're wanting to do really well. They're sort of up and coming athletes. But they're not, you know, there's lines of people down the block waiting for their autograph. Some athletes are that way, of course, some that I'm working with. But you want to start with the ones that maybe have, you know, just have a desire to do really well and are more open to working with new professionals. You know, in the first part of my book there, the chapter one, I talk about how, you know, some of the concerns of athletes, and what I find that concerns of peak performers are that they have, you know, that external orientation, that they're continually chasing those tangible rewards. They want to get the Olympic, they want to get a medal, or they just want to make the Olympic team, and they want recognition rather than that. Sometimes that's much more important than the inner fulfillment, and sometimes it kind of things get out of balance. Sometimes they have unreasonable expectations; they're setting unrealistic standards that are that lead to feelings of disappointment and failure because everything's based on their workouts and how the training's going. Sometimes, and you can address these problems. That's one of the ways that you can get started working with, you know, top athletes is dealing with these kinds of things. They're oftentimes, even though they seem to be very confident in their sport, often within they have low self-esteem, or they base the self-worth just on performance and results rather than on a strong sense of, you know, their personal identity. And often there's that blaming of themselves for mistakes or setbacks, and leads to anxiety and sometimes poor self-confidence. And oftentimes they have, you know, that focus is so strong on the results. Their coach wants them to get results. They want results. Their parents, their schools, everyone wants them to, you know, be the winner. And they're focused primarily on, you know, the outcome, that final outcome, rather than on the actual process of training. So they have a lot of difficulty with that, sometimes, you know, balancing their life. Sometimes it's really out of balance. And so those are some things that you can, you know, address with them. And so I found that, you know, you want to build trust very early and let them know that you have something very unique to offer that is, you know, different than their coach, something that, you know, where they can actually, you know, train their mind as well as their body. And you can, and you can also be a confidant. I think you can just be someone who they can talk to that's outside of their realm. You know, when, you know, Stacey Dragila wanted to work with me as a pole vaulter, she said, yeah, it's just, it would be nice to have somebody outside my coach and outside my, you know, sort of inner sphere of people who I could just talk to and be a support system. Somebody who they know is, you know, going to keep things confidential and all. And so those are some of the things that might lead you to work with someone like that. You know, you can tell them that everyone's physically ready, but everyone is not mentally ready. And this kind of training could really make the difference for them. And they have, as I mentioned, they have a lot of demands on their time, so you may not only have a few seconds to talk with them, or if you have a session on the phone, it might be like a 10-15 minute session rather than, you know, the usual 45 to 60 minute session, because they've got, you know, a lot of times they've got agents. If they're a high level athlete, they've got agents, they've got managers, media interviews, they've got sponsors, they've got race directors to deal with. And at first you might be sort of a lower priority on the list, but as they get to know you and trust you, you know, you get to be much more of a higher priority. And, it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life is to work with, you know, these high level athletes. And the majority of the people I work with, and maybe the majority of the people you will end up working with are, you know, just average folks or teams or, you know, school teams or, you know, adults, just average folks that want to get better and that are using, sports as a lifelong way to stay healthy. But the and that's where usually the more of the income comes from. You know, it's good to focus there. But with the elite athletes, often they want to. They may not have the funds. You know, Olympic athletes or people that are just kind of coming up in the field. Unless you're Michael Phelps or somebody really well known, you know, athletes might not have the financial resources to hire you, so you may want to offer your services to them for free or for a low fee, and you know, with the hope that, and most of the time, you know, 100% of the time I've worked with these athletes, they're willing to give you a very good testimonial at the end, you know, a video. Well, text is good, audio is better, and video is the best if you can get a short video testimonial from them. Even a few comments, that can make such a huge difference, and something you can put on your website and something you can show to people, you know, Facebook and all. And of course, you absolutely need to get permission from them to do that, and make sure that that is okay with them, and get that in like writing, in an email writing, before you do that. But that's the one of the real benefits of working with someone, a top level athlete, is that if you can get it. I think it's best not to talk about it at first, you know, but just to assume that, you know, that you do a good job and that they'll give you some nice comments about your work. And it's always worked that way for me. And I think it's something that that you can do as well. So if you're wanting to work with an Olympic athlete, you want to start contacting people, or if you make contacts, it's best to contact them 4 to 6 months early before the Olympics, because like now, you know, 6 weeks before, 7 weeks before the Olympics is really pretty soon. You know, it's most athletes at that point, they don't want to change anything in their routine, and they already have their people, their support team in place, and they're they're, you know, very focused on their sport, and it's not a time when they're sort of reaching out to new people unless they have some sort of, you know, an injury or a crisis or something going on where they absolutely have to address something that's new that's come up. Most of the time at that point they're really focused. So it's better to start, 4 to 6 months early. And one way to find athletes is to go to the events where they are in your local area in their sport. For instance, I went to the Peyton Jordan Invitational track meet at Stanford here a couple months ago, and it was a track meet where a lot of top athletes, Olympic hopefuls, were attending, and they wanted to they're really trying themselves out and seeing what kind of shape they're in for the Olympics. And there wasn't a lot of media there. It wasn't like impossible to get to them. So what I did was got a media pass, which in the smaller local events, it might be tennis for you, or it might be swimming or triathlons or equestrian. I know we've got coaches in this group with all kinds of different sports orientations. And so any sport that you're in, you can find out what local events are happening. Just, Google that. And sometimes, if you're in a major city or close to a major city, I mean, all kinds of events are coming through with, top athletes and Olympic caliber athletes are there competing. So what I did was I just found out who the person was in charge of media, press for this local meet, the Peyton Jordan meet here, and I just contacted him. Luckily, it's fairly easy, and I just said I would like to, is it possible to get a media pass for the event to write about it? If you can get an affiliation with a local magazine or a local newspaper, or you can even just be a free, you don't have to be an employee, you can just be a freelance writer. You can ask if you could write for, a publication. It could just be online. Most publications are online these days. It's fairly easy to get that. Even just write something for free, then you've got an affiliation, and you can say that and easily get a press pass to one of these events. So I got that, and then went there, and at Peyton Jordan, I was able to, actually go down on the track, and after each of the events, just be able to talk, go right on the track and talk to the athletes. Like Dina Castor is really well known in marathons, and she was right there. She was she tried to qualify for the marathon but didn't quite make it, and so now she's trying to go for the 10,000 meters, and she was there, and she's a Olympic bronze medalist in the marathon in Athens. I saw her there when I was working with Stacy, and so she was very willing to talk with me and had a great conversation and actually got a nice video interview with her. So take your video camera and actually ask some questions, and the athletes are used to that now, and just identify which publication you're with, or it could be just your own, a TV show for your own website, and say who you are and what you and ask some questions about, like with Dina. I ask her, I'm interested in the mental side of training and seeing what kinds of techniques you use to mentally prepare for your race. And oftentimes they're really interested in talking about that because they don't get asked those kinds of questions very often. So those are, and then I ask for, if I could do a follow-up interview with her, have her contact information, and she happily gave that to me. So I've been following up with her. And so you can do a follow-up interview afterward, maybe by phone, or sometimes athletes won't give you their phone number, but they'll give you their email, so you can follow up that way, do another short follow-up interview and gain a relationship with them. And then if you feel like the connection is there and if they have a need, then you can ask them, say, I'd like to do a work with you if you're interested, or maybe do it complimentary, and before the Olympics or before your event, whatever that is, and do an MP3 custom MP3 file for you for peak performance, and as I have for other athletes, and that's been very effective. And oftentimes they'll be really open to that. So that's a really good way to get started. And then you have that. That's a great way to build credibility because you've worked with, you know, someone who's a top level athlete at that point. So that's what I did at like this Peyton Jordan meet. And so that's a little bit about how to get started to, you know, interview them, offer to work with them. And sometimes you'll send an email to them too, and you'll, you know, it may be a month or so before you hear back. So you think, oh, geez, they're not interested, or it's too close to their event or the Olympics. And, you know, I waited a month, and then all of a sudden I heard back from one athlete, and he said, yeah, I want to work with you. So sometimes you never know. You can, you know, I'd say if you don't hear back, try sending another email a week later. You don't want to pound them with emails, or you don't want to be a pest. But you also, you know, want to just gently offer your services. So you have to find that balance there, you know, and maybe give them an article that you've written, some kind of content, something helpful, sample audio or something, so that they get a sense of hearing your voice or something that you've read. And that's always great to, rather than just marketing or just asking, giving content, valuable information is the best thing you can do for these athletes to get their interest, I think. And that's been my experience. And then what you want to do is, when you do hear back, so be patient, and they might be sick. You know, one athlete was sick for a while, so they didn't get back to me. So give them a break. there are also some athletes, if they're well-known, they're very busy, they're traveling, and they don't look at their email a lot. Or maybe their agent, often their agent is their brother, or someone in the family is looking at their emails and filtering them out or something. So they may not have gotten it. And so there's all kinds of things that could be going on with them because they're very busy people. But yeah, you want to be able to get back to them as soon as they contact you, and then set up a time to talk with them by phone. Or if they're, oftentimes they might be in another country, they're traveling around doing lots of races, so you can talk with them by Skype. Fortunately, with Skype, it's free, and most everyone has a Skype account these days, so ask them for their Skype name, and you can get them in your contacts, and then that's a great way to connect with them as well. And then set up a time with them. One of the things you want to do first, like I did with a woman, Sally, the case study I wanted to talk about, is that you want to do your athlete research first. So look up the athlete's name online, and often, you know, you'll find out all kinds of information there. And if it's a top athlete or well-known athlete, they expect you to know their background because everyone else knows their background. And if you, that's one of the mistakes that some coaches make. If you don't know, you know, what they've done in the past, they're thinking, well, where have you been? You know, or they're thinking that, you know, you don't know me. How could you, you know, work with me if you don't know my background? Now, you know, this is different than, you know, just the average athlete on the street. You know, some clients, if you work with someone that's, you know, that no one knows, of course you're not going to know their background, and you don't have to do any research with them. But I want to tell you that it's different with elite athletes that are well known, that they, you know, their information is online, and so it's really helpful to know that. And also then you can give them the respect that they deserve and just say, you know, here, I know your accomplishments, you know, you've done an amazing job here. Maybe they did a race just last weekend. You know, if you look at their blog or just look up their online, you'll see that they're racing somewhere or they're doing some event, and they did a fantastic job in some event, and so you want to, you know, let them know that you, you know that, and congratulate them on what they've just accomplished, and that helps build your credibility and build your bond with them, that that you know what's going on with them. And it'll, you know, you can find out online too what events they have coming up, and what, so you know what their goals are already. That information is readily available, so you want to use the internet. Just Google their name and find out what's happening with them, and then you can share that. So you want to show them respect. There's a balance there, though. I think you want to show them respect, but you don't want to put them on a pedestal like everyone else does, because you know, with some really well-known athletes, they're putting them way up there on this pedestal, and they're used to that, and they kind of get tired of that. And so if you can just treat them like an average, like, you know, like just on an even level, that you are just there to help them, just like you are with any other person. That sometimes I think that's really a fresh perspective. An athlete will respect you because you're the professional in the sports psychology field and in the mental training field. So you don't want to put them way up high and you sort of way down low. You want to be, you know, picture in your mind, you know, that's where you can use your visualization. Picture yourself on an even level with that person, that they are an expert in their sport. You are an expert in mental training, peak performance, and sports psychology. And you're a performing edge coach and certified, and you have things to offer them that they can learn from you. So see yourself as a professional, that, and they're seeking your help. So that's where you want to be able to be, you know, confident in your area, and that way you'll develop a really great relationship with these people. They'll look up to you as opposed to just you looking up to them. So you know, for instance, with Sally. Sally's going for, is a Kenyan, and she's going, she lives in this country, and that's a woman I met at the Peyton Jordan meet that I wanted to, you know, use as a case study. And she's actually, she was a silver medalist in the 2011 World Championships in the 10,000 meters, and now she's going for, you know, the Olympics, the 10,000 meters, and she's actually over in Kenya right now. She lives in Oregon, has lived here for many years, but she still is a Kenyan citizen and is competing for Kenya, which is, you know, much higher standard, much harder to get on the Kenyan team than it would be to get on the USA, you know, 10,000 meter team. Actually, because, you know, they're Kenyans and Ethiopians just dominate the, you know, the 5,000 meters, 10,000 meter, those events, the distance events. So, you know, it's actually more competitive to get on a Kenyan team than the Olympics, than the actual Olympics competitions. So she's actually there right now. She just flew to Kenya, and this weekend, Sunday, it's either Saturday or Sunday, this weekend is the Kenyan Olympic trials. So she's going to be there. We'll be able to find out online, you know, how she did, and her goal is to make the Olympic team. And so she really was open to me working with her to be able to work with, you know, the mental part of training, the visualization. And she's, you know, she's sponsored by Nike and has, fully sponsored, so she doesn't have to work at all. Wouldn't that be nice to be able to just and have all your bills paid by your sponsor? And yet she's, you know, fighting to, I think, to get, you know, get more recognition. She's just an incredible person. She's got a great attitude, and you know, the Olympic pressure is huge, and so. She she wanted to, you know, to work with me to be able to sharpen that mental part to keep, because every athlete has those difficult times, those tough points, those trouble spots and blind spots that they need to work on. And so that's what you want to find out is where they're struggling, where they're having those challenges. And, you know, you'll find that the pacing is different with high-level athletes, too. They sometimes they may, you know, they're just rushing out the door. They only have 15 minutes with you, and so as opposed to an hour session, depending on if they have a family, if they have other obligations. So you want to, you know, it's good to have some rapport building and some, you know, just talking, getting to know them, but you want to get to the point quicker than maybe just than you do with just some, with an average athlete. You don't have to spend as much time rapport building because they want you to, you know, just get to what you want to do. And you get to what's their next race, what's their goal, and let's visualize that. What do you want to happen in that race? And really get to their sport, to their event, and what it is that you want to accomplish very quickly. That way you'll, you know, respect their time. And if they are, you know, short on time, you want to be able to accomplish something, you know, substantial in that first session so that you can find out, for instance, ask them, you know, about one of their best races in the past and ask them to bring in all five senses. And, you know, they might say it's the time they won a race. Like with Sally, it was, you know, when she got second, it was silver medalist in the world championships last year. And she described that to me and how it was so amazing that she was able to, you know, she was in the pack and just, you know, back in fifth or sixth place most of the time. And, you know, most of the time people wait till like the last 400 meters to start their kick and to start moving forward. And she, for some reason, she decided that, you know, at about 600 meters, out 700 meters to start her kick early and get moved up into a better position to right behind the leader, this other woman, Vivian. And so she moved up right behind Vivian. So she was in a really good place. So when they came around to the last lap with only one, you know, the bell lap, she was already, you know, she was already in attack mode, and she had moved up into a position where she was, you know, she was in control and didn't have to worry about, you know, running around all these other women or getting boxed in or getting in a strange position at a time when everyone else is trying to move up. She'd already done her moving up before that. No one had expected that at all. And so she, you know, moved into that second position. And then when the bell lap came, she was able to surge and just stay right behind the leader the whole time around. And she wasn't able to pass her, but she, you know, got that second place position. She was put herself in the right position early on. So that was a really special race for her. She described that to me in real detail, and I wrote down all the, you know, the details there. And then she, so we made a visualization, right, in that very first session, made a visualization based on what happened in that World Championships. You know, with all the details, using her words, how she sees it, how she experiences it, how she understands it. And so she, when I did the visualization afterward, then she just said, "Wow, that was fantastic." You know, just being able, I saw myself right there, and I could see how powerful that was. And I really want, and it's great that I could recapture that moment and replay that in my mind. It's great that we have it on tape. You know, I was recording that the whole time, and then I was able to send it to her in an email right afterward, that the MP3 file. And so she had that, so she's been playing it ever since we started working together about 2 months ago. And then, you know, after that, she was going up to the Prefontaine meet in Oregon, which I got a press pass for that as well. And so I was able to see her up there and use the you know, use the visualization, you know, do more visualizations for her leading up to Prefontaine, because she was doing the 3,000 meters up there, which is a shorter distance, and she wanted to, you know, really work on her speed. And so we worked on, you know, just staying really focused, really, you know, being able to use all the skills that she'll need in the 10,000 meters, but it's just more intense. It's more fast, and she can actually, you know, get a, even a better aerobic and anaerobic workout, you know, with the 3,000 meters there. And all the crowd, you know, she just talked about how the, you know, the when we prepared for the, it did another visualization and MP3 preparation for the Prefontaine meet, which most of you know, if you're into track and field, it's probably the most prestigious track meet in the country, in the U.S., next to the Olympic trials. And she was so excited for that, you know, just realizing that there's so much history there. And she talked about, you know, the Hayward Field there and Prefontaine, all these years of track and field history, and the crowd really understands the sport, and you know they're up on their feet all the time, just cheering for the athletes all the way around, and it's just a real respect there. It's a really special place, and she actually lives there, you know, in Eugene, so she didn't have to travel. She was right there at Hayward Field, so it was great. She, it felt like it's home for her. So you know, all those things, we visualized that she could just be right there. And there were, you know, media people from all over the world there. I actually got, you know, I got a press pass and was able to get into the press conference the day before and talk to, you know, interview all the great athletes from all over the world. It was just an amazing experience. Just as a side note, that's a great thing for you. If you can get a press pass to some of these events, you can actually get in and talk to, you know, all the, you know, names that are, you know, sort of household names, legends in track and field. I got to personally interview Allison Felix, and who's, you know, I don't know, she's won about 10 gold medals in the, you know, in 200 meters and 100 meters, and, you know, in the relays, and Sonia Richardson, and got to interview Bekele, you know, from Ethiopia. He's the current world record holder in the 5,000 and the 10,000. And, you know, you want to get your photo with these people too, if you can. I got, you know, hand your camera to someone else and ask them to, you know, take a picture of the two of you. That's really nice too, to have on your website. And, got to interview, Lagat, who's, you know, from Kenya, and he's, you know, many-time world champion and world record holder also, and in all those distance events. And so all of these people were just, you know, it was a great experience to be able to interview each one of them. And by video, you know, just bring your video camera, and then you can, if you're a media person, you can, you know, you can use those videos on your website. So really great content from, and just some great quotes from all of those people. So just wanted to let you know about that. With the press conference, it was really a special kind of experience there, where you could actually, you know, walk. You want to get there early to walk up to the athletes to talk with them individually. And so with Sally, you know, some of the things that are to be aware of too are that, you know, athletes travel a lot, and so sometimes it might be like a one-way conversation. You know, we had some great conversations by phone, several sessions before she left, and then now she's in Kenya, and you know, things sort of intensify as you get to closer to the Olympic trials and then the Olympics, and sometimes athletes may not be in touch with you for, you know, a week or two or three or something, and you might just be sending them. You can just send, you know, create videos for them. You know, your audio MP3 files, and just, and also send them articles, and just hope that they're probably receiving them. It's just that they don't have time to respond, or they may be, like in Kenya, there's a lot of places in Kenya where there's no internet access. So she might not be able to access her email. So realize that there's sort of some time gaps there, and that top athletes, they travel a lot. They have, oftentimes, they don't have a regular schedule, And so they may not be able to get back to you for periods of time, but you can still be sending them information, and they're probably, you know that they're probably getting it when they can, and that they'll get back to you, you know, most likely after their event. With the Olympic pressures and how to deal with those, our next topic is, you know, when you're flying, you know, a lot of things are going on with athletes. They're flying to other countries, so they're dealing with jet lag. And in Sally's case, it's high altitude. You know, Oregon and Eugene is just, of course, sea level. And she has to go to Kenya and compete in Nairobi, which is 5,600 feet. In the on the track there, at altitude, so she wanted to get over there as quickly as she could. You know, ideally, you want to be there a month early to acclimate to the high altitude. But she found out she was hoping to go early and not do the Prefontaine meet. But then she said that because she's a Nike athlete, that Nike said she needed to do Prefontaine, be there. And so she did that race, which was good training. But then that she had to get on a plane the next day and just fly straight there, which is only 10 days or so, to acclimate to the high altitude. So she went up to her hometown, which is at 8,000 feet, and she's now training at 8,000 feet for several days, so that she'll just be able to come down to 5,600 feet in Nairobi to do the Olympic trials this weekend. So we're hoping that will work well. And so with that kind of situation, the mind can be saying, oh gosh, you know, only 10 days to acclimate. I can't do this. It's everyone else has an advantage because they've been here longer. You can be saying that, talking yourself down, or you can say to yourself, you know, my mind and body are adapting well to this, to the high altitude, and you can do a visualization to help them, which I did with Sally, you know, around being able to acclimate well, and that her body's easily getting used to the altitude there, and that's her homeland. She grew up there, and everything is familiar, and that you know, she'll be able to be just fine. So you want to be able to get your mind in line with your body. So I was making her, you know, visualizations around that, you know, the acclimation and the altitude and you know, being able to rest from the jet lag and all of that, so she can be ready. So that's, you know, some of the Olympic pressures. And there's the fact that the Kenyan sports authorities and the boards are kind of disorganized, and they didn't know which date they were going to do the Olympic trials, switching back and forth. It was crazy. And sometimes they have different kinds of criteria as to who's going to make the team. So it's not necessarily just the top three. It might be only the top two that make the Olympic team, and they choose one athlete by, you know, other criteria, who's done well during the year. So there's a lot of unknowns there, and it's a tendency for athletes to, you know, focus on that and to worry about, you know, what the decisions that other people are making, when in fact you can't really, you know, those are things you can't control. So it's good to tell your athletes that let's focus on the things we can control, which are your training, your pacing, your rest, your mental attitude, your, you know, the things that you can do for your own performance. And even though those other decisions are really important, and they're things that people are, you know, those are decisions that may impact you. You know, you really can't do anything about them. So it's let's put those in the background, and so you can help your athletes to focus on, you know, the things that they can control, and let go of the things they can't control, and be at peace with that, be okay with that, and help them to realize most of the time they've accomplished so much already. I mean, gosh, Sally's been, you know, 9-time national champion, NCAA champion, and just you know, phenomenal. She's done more than any other female athlete in this country in terms of collegiate distance running. While she was even going to school, getting her nursing degree here in the U.S., pretty amazing. So you want to remind them of how much they've accomplished already, so that everything isn't on the Olympics, but they're it's just one event of many. So those are some things with Sally. Oh, I wanted to mention also the top mistakes to avoid with athletes. The next topic is don't do too much chit chat to get at the beginning. You want to just get to their goal, get to the point, and you want to be consistent with them. They may not be consistent with you in terms of they may forget an appointment, or they may, you know, be traveling and not be able to make an appointment, or their schedule changes. A lot of that sort of thing happens. But you want to just be flexible, not get upset that they may have forgotten about you or forgotten an appointment. It probably just, you know, they've just gotten overwhelmed. And so, but you want to be the consistent one and just keep, follow up with them and just be able to reschedule something so that you stay, you know, just stay a constant support system for them. And then with regard to testimonials, one thing that's really important ethically is to, you know, you don't want to reveal the names. It's a tendency to want to, you know, kind of tell the world, oh my gosh, guess who I'm working with, or guess who I've got. But you don't want to do that until you've first gained trust with them and you've had some sessions with them, and then you get their permission to be able to say their name that you're working with them. Get that in writing in an email. Because it's absolutely critical that you not break confidentiality with them, because especially with top athletes, if you do that, sometimes the media, if they get hold of that, then they start asking the athlete, oh, so you're working with a sports psychologist or a mental training person, and that puts additional pressure on them. So it's best not to to talk about who you're working with. Just keep it confidential, and then after you've had some results, then you can ask them for ask them to say if the way you can say it is, I did with Sally, that, you know, we've been working together for a little while, and I just wondered if you had a comment or two that you could say about our work together, if it's been helpful for you, and if I could use that. Something like that. You don't want to say, make it real formal, or you don't want to make it sound like a big endorsement or something, but just a comment about our work together. Make it just simple and friendly and supportive. And most athletes, every athlete I've ever worked with is very happy to do that. So those are some things that oftentimes, too, if an athlete is really shy and doesn't want their name revealed at all, it's best to, you know, wait till, say, after the Olympics to say who it is that you're working with, and ask them permission and then talk about it. That way they don't, after the Olympics, there's not nearly as much media attention on what's going on. So those are some things I wanted to share about with the Olympic, this first Olympic case study. I actually have four athletes I'm working with, so I can share some more things next time about other athletes that I'm working with too. So I just wanted to open up the lines here and see and kind of get your comments and questions see what you think, what your reaction is. It would be great to get your questions. So, anyone want to jump in? I think there's someone else. Let's see, what is it? 949, is that Tanya?
No, it's Rob.
Rob, that's right. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting your area code there. Hi, Rob, how are you?
Good, how's it going?
Good, good. Yeah, so, everyone, I just want to ask, we've got a nice big group here. What kind of questions do you have or comments? Anyone can jump in.
I have a question, Dr. Joanne. This is Daryl.
Oh, hi, Daryl. How are you? Good.
How are you? Good. I had a question, like, when you go to these events, is this like something, do you walk around with a card or something, just kind of incognito type thing, or do you actually walk around and, is it more like passive? You know, you just kind of talk with the athletes and the coaches and things, or do you have a table, or do you, you know, just trying to see how you go about that.
You mean when I, like, have a media pass? And
yeah, when you go, yeah, I'm just trying to, like, you know, do you just have a card available type thing, or do you just, you know, I mean, like, I would think if you're over-aggressive, they would be... They wouldn't like that. But
That's a good question. Yeah, and it all depends on the event. You want to kind of see what other people are doing, what the other media people are doing to kind of get an idea. Most of the time, what I'll do is just have a backpack, you know, day pack, just a small day pack on my back with that's where having a book is really nice. You know, I'll have a couple, two or three of my books in my day pack. And so what you want to have is... Hey, your video. Here's your. That's a good question. Is kind of what's your what should you pack with you? Because you don't have a table or anything. It's just a matter of kind of walking around, talking to the athletes right after their event. They're just they've just finished their. If it's like a track event, they've just finished the event. They're just kind of walking around the track or going off to the side. So you want to be mobile. So you want to have a, I think the best thing is like just a small day pack or a fanny pack. And, if you don't have a book, then you can just have a fanny pack with some of your business cards. You want to make sure you have a piece of paper, and a pen, something to write with, and then your video camera, I always bring some water because I'm always getting dehydrated, you know, especially if it's hot out. So, and a Cliff Bar or something to, you know, to keep your energy up because you be walking around a lot. So those are just the main things to have. If you have a book or something to hand to them, if you have a pamphlet or a brochure or, you know, you can make up postcards with, you know, your services on them, that kind of thing. You can give them that, either a business card or a postcard. So I'll have those things. You can have a clipboard if you want, you know, with a piece of paper so that you can write easier. Or sometimes athletes just like to be things to be informal. And so if you're going to ask for their contact information, you know, it's easiest to – I just whip out a piece of paper and just have, you know, write their name and email and phone number if they'll offer that. And, you know, just have that on you know, just an informal piece of paper. I don't make out a form or anything that looks really official because, you know, athletes – are very sensitive about giving out their contact information, and sometimes they'll give you their agent's information, and that's so their own information is much better if you can get that. If they give your agent's information, then you can try to go through an agent to, you know, get a follow up interview or to work with them as well. So those are the things that I just use. If you have a small video camera, that's good. You always have two or three pens in case one goes out, of course. If you have your book, you can hand them that. You know, I'll tell them, yeah, I'd like to give you my book. And like some athletes will say, wow, that's great. Can you autograph it to me? And they remember. Then when you follow up with them afterward, then they remember you. And if you, my books are available too. If you don't have a book, you can, you know, get mine, you know, purchase them in bulk through, just send me an email and I can give you, you know, a discounted price on that so that you have, you could give them my book with, and have your contact information in there, have a sticker or something that you put on the book or your business card so that they contact you for sessions. So does that help, Daryl?
Yeah, no, that's good. I just, you know, was trying to think of a good approach, you know, like the soft approach versus, like, you know, over-aggressive, I guess, would be the, I would think would be more effective.
Yeah, and I think you, at first I was like you, I was a little, felt like I wasn't sure how to approach the athletes afterward, and so I watched the other media people, and you want to take your cue from them, how they're approaching the athletes and what questions they ask. And so oftentimes, you know, walk up to someone, and if another media person is there, they'll be asking them a question or two, and just take note of the kinds of questions they're asking and how they approach the athletes, and then you can, you know, wait till they're finished, and then you introduce yourself. You know, I would just say, "Hi, I'm Dr. Joanne Dahlketter. I'm writing with Runner's Illustrated magazine. That's one of the magazines I'm associated with. And yeah, I just wanted to ask you about, you know, I'm interested as a sports psychology. I'm interested in the mental side of training and what kinds of things you do to prepare." Something like that. You get right into your question. Don't do a lot of chit chat beforehand. Just say your name, your affiliation, or if you don't have an affiliation, just say your website. And that you're writing for, you know, and then say your website name, and then say, "Here's my question for you," and just there, you know, just get right into a question of some sort. And then after they, if you have a couple of questions, ask them those, and then just say, "Yeah, I'd like to do a follow-up interview with you. If you could, do you have an email? What's your best email to contact you at?" And then write that down, and then the and phone number. You know, just say right away, email, phone number. You don't have to give a justification for it or anything. Just ask it right that way, and most athletes will offer that information for you. So, yeah, works great. So you want to just kind of travel light and mobile when you're walking around. have two or three pieces of paper so you can get contact information and make any notes to yourself as well. And then make sure you bring your video camera. Make sure it's, of course, charged ahead of time, and that you've got there's plenty of space, hard drive space on there, whatever, to record the material. So, yeah, that's a great question, Daryl. Thank you so much for asking that. Did you have anything else? Other people have questions, too? You can press *6 to unmute your phone if you want. Kara, how you? Since you're new, how was that for you? Was that helpful? The information?
Oh, Esther was perfect. Thank you. And the question was really good too. I just thought it was great. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. Yeah. Glad. And even if you're, this is, you know, if you're thinking about working with, you know, some top athletes, this is great information, and it works. A lot of these things work for any level, even athletes that are in a, you know, school level or college. There's usually one athlete that's the top person, the top dog that, you know, is considered the elite athlete. And so these kind of principles work with those kinds of folks too, at just about any level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dr. Joanne, the question I have is...
Yeah, is this Rob?
It's Rob. What other... do you do a lot of like the MP3 audio? Is there anything else you do, any kind of... is there anything else that you provide, or is that just pretty much an MP3 player, and then... just a visualization piece of it, or is there other things that, or do you go deeper, or are there other tools that get deeper into the mental training side?
Yeah, well, I talk about all the things that are in the Your Performing Edge book, as well as other things. So, you know, for instance, I'll introduce the athlete, and I'll say I do. You know, one of the things I talk about is in addition, there's hundreds of techniques in this program, and three of them to start with are the three P's, what I call the three P's of Your Performing Edge: positive images, power words, and present focus. So I'll say, I work with, you know, positive images. So, visualization techniques, how to see yourself doing it right. And then secondly, power words, how to use keywords and phrases to coach yourself all along the way to get the results you want. How to talk to yourself in really positive ways. And then number three, present focus, how to be right on, right here, right now, and how to take your mind off. Often we're thinking about the mistakes of the past, or we're worrying about the future, but the only moment we can do anything about is the one we're in right now, and usually they'll agree with that. And so talk about how to, you know, stay in the present focus in this present time, you know, so that you can really affect what it is that you're doing right now, be most effective. So I'll start with those three, you know, like a simple concept like that, so that they see that there's the mind, you know, takes in threes a lot easier. And Then I'll talk about, you know, other, all kind of, there's just, yeah, tons of other types of tools that that you can work with. You know, the, some of the things that we talked about last time with the mental training workouts. You can do, you know, talk about, you know, visualizations or mental training for healing. You know, if they're having an injury, every athlete has some sore spots, so you can deal with that. You know, accelerated recovery, race mental preparation for an event, or you can do workout preparation, decision making. You know, how to, you know, a lot of times athletes are going through some sort of decision of, you know, whether to do the 5,000 or the 10,000 in their you know, competition, or whether to which coach to work with, or which workout is best. So you can work with them with decision making, handling difficult situations. Maybe they've got some, you know, sometimes it the work expands into other areas where they're trying to decide where to live, or they're going through a tough time at school, or they're, you know, having some some athletes are, you know, burned out on their sport, and they're wondering whether they should continue their sport or not. So a top and then top Olympic athletes, there's just all the pressures there to deal with, how to handle the media. You know, you can even do some media coaching with them, how to handle how to talk to media people, and how to not you know, just stay on their topic and not let the media get in their face, or that kind of thing. So you can do all kinds of things there. Getting out of a slump, how to handle the, you know, sometimes if an athlete's had a bad workout or one bad race or one bad competition, then they are having a hard time, you know, getting bouncing back into the next you know, into their next, you know, getting back into a good performance again. So they, you know, you can help them with that, you know, being able to visualize, get back to what they loved about the sport in the first place and what brought them into it. You can talk with them about dealing with pressure and handling anxiety from all sources. People have anxiety from just about anything, from, you know, the mistakes that they've just had, and from difficult, maybe they're having a struggle with their coach and they're having communication problems. You can work with those kinds of things. Sometimes, you know, just feeling overwhelmed, you know, athletes are just feeling totally overwhelmed with all the responsibilities that they've got to, you know, perform for their coach, for their sponsors, for their parents, and they're just feeling, and there's just too much. And if it's a student, they've got to still go to school, and yeah, their grades might be falling behind. So you can deal with kind of the balancing stuff, how to work with the time that they do have during the day to get everything done. So yeah, all those are some examples. You can help them with building confidence. You know, in chapter, you know, in that third section of the Your Performing Edge book, there's, you know, issues about building, how to build confidence, how to believe in yourself, getting rid of those, that inner critic, you know, decreasing the negative thoughts and focusing. That's a huge one. Of course, athletes just, you know, they're thinking about all the negative stuff that might go on. So you can work with that, work with their that negative thinking and turn it around to positive thinking. You could, you know, do that one exercise with taking a piece of paper and having them put a line down the middle, and then writing all their negative thoughts on the left-hand side, their self-doubts, and then immediately writing something positive, their power words or their positive reframing on the right-hand side. So that's a really good exercise for them to do. You know, all the things that we've talked about for regular athletes, you can do with elite athletes too. And I think it's just a matter of really customizing it for them. They want to feel like you're not just, they're not just an average person, but they're really special, and that you're customizing this workout for them, the mental training Distractions is a big thing, too, with Olympic athletes. They may get distracted by all kinds of things. Something that maybe something was written in the media about them that was negative, or maybe their sponsor is like pulling back on you know, the amount of money that they're getting based on their performances. Or maybe they're saying, the sponsor's saying, you've got to perform at this level or else you're going to get cut back to this other, you know, to a lower level. So those are kind of distractions that can put extra pressure on top athletes. Just, you know, making key life transitions and decisions is another area to work on. You know, like some athletes, this might be their last Olympic Games, and they're thinking about, what am I going to do after this? How am I going to translate what I've learned, or, you know, the skills that I have in the Olympics? How am I going to make a living after this when I'm no longer an Olympic athlete? That's a huge one. Those are all, you know, some key areas to work on. You just go, and then losing weight, you know, a lot of athletes are concerned that, like, when they're tapering, like swimmers, you know, you have to taper for about 3 weeks before, you know, your event, and it's really hard not to to overeat when all of a sudden you're cutting way back on your training. It's really tough. So there's weight issues there. Yeah. And if you go through the whole table of contents of the Your Performing Edge book, all those topics in there are things that I can, you can work on with athletes as well. Does that kind of help, Rob? I don't know if Rob might be.
Yeah. No, I had on mute. Yeah, definitely. And then, just to kind of a follow-up really quick, how many sessions is it once a week that you usually work with them? Or, I would assume probably more so as it's closer to the event. But typically, if you have a client, it's just, you know, a standard season. How often should you work with them? Or is it, like, physical, like, daily? I don't know. Is that, like, too much? Or is it just once or twice a week or once every other week?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I think it's it can be as needed with clients. Generally, once a week, I think is a good amount of time for to do one session of 45 minutes, 50 minutes to an hour. But if with top athletes, they're oftentimes traveling. If they have limited time, then it could be a 30-minute session. Sometimes it could be a 15-minute session. Whatever you can get in their schedule is okay. And then in between that time, you can be also sending them articles or, you know, your feedback from the session. I'm always taking notes on my computer as I'm talking to someone on the phone. So then after the session, then you take your notes and turn that into kind of a little summary of what you talked about and send them that feedback. So that's part of working with them as well. And then giving them a homework assignment of some sort based on the learning for that session. So you can give them something to do, and then you can be checking during the week. I would say, you know, maybe one email in the middle of the week to see, you know, hope you got, you know, just checking in, hope you got the MP3 okay, or the homework assignment, or my notes, and let me know if you have any questions. You know, you could send them an email like that. With top athletes, they don't want to be bothered too much, so you don't want to be sending emails all the time or calling or anything, because they've got a lot going on. And I think once a week for a session is good. If something comes up or they've got something really intense and they want to talk to you, you know, more than that, for a couple times during a week in the middle, that's fine too. You know, let it come from them that they request that. I wouldn't impose that on them, kind of thing, because most of them are very independent, and they've got a lot of support anyway. Top athletes have a, you know, coach and agents and a lot of things going on. So I think once a week is a good a general rule. Yeah, is that helpful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Duran, are you there? You have any questions or thoughts? I don't know if you're in your coffee shop.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute.
That's okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
No, that was great. I have a baseball player I'm starting to work with next week, a 16-year-old kid who's been in a slump. So he's given me lots of ideas for helping him out and allowing him to focus more. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, someone who's has a lot of potential, sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So you can use some of these techniques with him. And,
yeah, definitely.
And give him your book or let him buy your book, whatever. I'm sure that oftentimes when you have a book like that, you can use your book as a guideline of how to work with people. That works great. And I guess all of you have the Your Performing Edge book. And one way to sort of structure sessions is you can just start with the first chapter in the Your Performing Edge book and then go through each chapter and go ahead and, go over the material in that first chapter with them. And then the next week, go to the second chapter. Or you can skip to that first, the second section there is getting into more of the techniques and go over some of that with each person each session. And then I have the workbook that I'm developing, so you can go in the Performing Edge Coach membership area, and at the top there where it says Coach Resources, just click there and you can get all the sections of the workbook. I'm, sending those out as soon as I get them done for you. So, yeah, that's great. Thanks, Duran. Yeah, any other thoughts or questions? Or?
No, it's good to know how to put things together, and the workbook, I think, definitely helps us all as a guide as well, assessments and things like that to help with the initial get-going of the coaching.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, that's great. Yeah, yes. I know Sue's on the line too. I don't know if you have any questions or I know that Sue probably is in a meeting, so you may not be able to speak. But if you do, you can always let me know by email any questions you have too. So yeah, that sounds great. Well, I want to thank everyone for coming, and we'll have our next live call in 2 weeks. It's always the second and fourth Thursday of the month, so it'll be June the 28th, and we'll talk more about this topic and also the mental training plan and how to do logbooks, track your progress and that kind of thing with your client. Both for yourself, how you're doing as a coach, and then how your client is doing with their mental training as well. So, make it a little bit more. I think it's if you can structure it more for the client, then they feel like they've got a real program that they're working with, not just sessions, but a structured program, just like they do with their physical training. That helps them to stay with you longer. And I would say with each session, too, it's to keep clients with you. It's good to say to them, so here's what we worked on this week. And then next week we're going to work on this, either expanding the current topic or going to the next topic kind of thing. So you want to be able to say to them what's coming up. Or you might want to save for the next two sessions, or so we can work on these topics here, so that you give them something to look forward to. That's always good at the end of a session, and then it's always also good to leave the client with some hope, some kind of positive feedback at the end of a session, and say, I think that this is great. So, kind of summarize anything good that was happening during the session, or anything that you felt they. Their strengths that they brought up, or potential that they have, And you can say, I feel like this is, you have huge potential here to do really well based on what I see with, A, B, and C, and then just to try to, give some observations of what it is that they, what you've seen in that client. So it's not just, so it has some evidence. So you're supporting that with, something you've really seen in that client, and then really look for those strengths so that you can bring those out in the person, because that's the key to, one key to success with this, with coaching is really building on their strengths. I think so. Great. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for coming. And yeah, I appreciate your questions and your investing your time in this program. And we'll see you next time. So thank you, everyone. And everyone can say a goodbye or a thank you if you want.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. All right. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. And I'll send you an email in between. All right.
Thank you.
All right, bye now.
Thank you.